Hello, everybody. I'm Lou Dobbs. President Biden is back in the White House after his blunder-filled 4 days in Belgium and Poland. He committed solecisms repeatedly and painfully. Mr. Biden contradicted the White House policy dicta that sanctions do act as deterrents and maintained the sanctions are meant as punishment. He also told some soldiers what they would see when they go to Ukraine, describing the Ukrainians they would see fighting the Russians. All of that, of course, presupposed that the soldiers he was talking to would be in Ukraine. But of course, the 82nd Airborne nor any other of our American troops will be going to Ukraine. Biden also declared the United States will respond in kind if Putin uses chemical weapons in Ukraine. The White House says the president again misspoke. He meant to say that the United States would respond accordingly, but never use chemical weapons. And the really big one, President Biden saying, quote, "For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power," end quote. Biden's ad-lib played into the hands of Vladimir Putin's propagandist and was simply the capstone on what had been 4 days of Biden's blundering boondoggle to Europe. No wonder Biden's approval numbers are at an all-time low in the NBC News poll, 40%. No wonder 70% of those polled don't have confidence that Biden can deal with the Russian war on Ukraine, and a majority say the country is headed in the wrong direction. White House staff say the president is anxious to pass his legislative agenda. And folks, I don't believe we should allow President Biden to take any action of any kind until we know more about his mental health and his cognitive ability, whether he's truly fit to carry out his duties as president. Mr. Biden made mistakes every day of his European trip. Mistakes in some instances that could have, in fact, may yet escalate a war. They weren't mere gaffes. He's a man who obviously isn't in control of his faculties. And I urge the House and Senate leaders of both parties to hold a summit to find out, to make clear whether the nation is secure in the knowledge that Biden will take no step until he's taken a cognitive test and cleared it with flying colors. Congressman Ronny Jackson, retired Navy admiral and White House physician to three presidents, Bush, Obama, and Trump, has called for a cognitive test twice over the past year because of Biden's lapses and what he sees as a man who is mentally impaired. We can't afford for any president to risk our national security and the lives and livelihoods of 300 million Americans because of what appears to be clearly an addled, weakened mind. I urge everybody listening to consider telling your congressmen, senators, and governors, and state legislators to insist on a cognitive test immediately for President Biden. President Trump took a cognitive test immediately when Democrats questioned his state of mind. The Biden White House has twice refused. It's time for the president to demonstrate his mental acuity and take the cognitive test. To put it directly, what is the White House hiding? Please consider calling, writing, whatever, to let your elected officials know how you feel about this important issue. And thank you for doing so. President Trump is now on offense, taking the battle over the 2020 presidential election straight into the face of the radical and Marxist Dems who tried to stop his campaign in 2016 and tried to overthrow his presidency. The 45th president has filed a lawsuit against Hillary Clinton, the Democratic National Committee, Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta, FBI director James Comey, Fusion GPS, and 20 other defendants. And more Trump lawsuits are expected, one as early as next week. And meanwhile, there's a new election afoot, and it's a battle that Republicans are supposed to win. But Gateway pundits Joe Hoft raises questions about how seriously the Alaskan Republican Party is taking election security. Hoft reporting the voter rolls have ballooned to 103% of registrations, and the statewide June 11th primary election to replace Congressman Don Young will have all mail-in ballots with no signature check. Do you think Ronna McDaniel at the RNC cares who wins at Alaska? Do you think the Republicans in Alaska care? Sobering, isn't it? Luckily, the state of Ohio is nothing like Alaska. They care who wins. On average, the party not in the White House historically has won a net gain of 4 to 5 seats in the midterm election. Running for the Senate seat that Rob Portman is resigning is the former Ohio State Treasurer, Josh Mandel. He's an attorney, former Ohio State Representative, and served 8 years in the Marine Corps Reserves with 2 tours in Iraq. Josh, great to have you with us on the Great America Show.
Thanks, Lou. Good to be on.
I want to get to first and foremost, your reason for running. What motivated you to run for office?
Sure. So I'm the grandson of Holocaust survivors. My grandfather, Joe, is from Kielce, Poland. He lost his mother, father, and 5 siblings in the Nazi death camps, and he was the lone survivor, survived Auschwitz and multiple other camps, and was ultimately liberated by American troops. And then my grandma, Fernanda, was an Italian Jew, which was relatively uncommon at the time. There were about 50,000 of them in Italy that went back many generations. My grandma, Fernanda, my aunt Marietta, my aunt Renata, my uncle Mario. And my grandma Fernanda was hidden and saved by a network of courageous Christian families. They took her in, hid her, raised her as if she was their own, and saved her life. And at the very same time as my grandfather Joe was in the camps and my grandmother Fernanda was being hidden by this network of courageous Christians, my other grandfather Harold from Cleveland, Ohio, who went to John Adams High School right here in the Cleveland area, he was wearing the uniform of our great country, serving in the United States Army Air Corps. And so when I was growing up here in the Cleveland area, my grandparents, they came from different perspectives, obviously, but they ultimately arrived at the same conclusion. And it was a conclusion that they really hammered into me as a young kid. And it was this, it was that in this life, I owe two debts to 2 very powerful forces. But for these forces, I wouldn't be here right now. One of those powerful forces was the United States military, you know, brave men in places like Iwo Jima, Omaha Beach, Normandy, who risked their life and paid the ultimate sacrifice to liberate my grandparents. But for those brave men, those young teenagers, right, from places like Cleveland, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, Sussex, New Jersey, New York City, Tuscaloosa, Austin, Texas, all over this country, rural, urban, suburban areas, risking their lives. Some of them 16 years old, lying about their age just so they can get into the fight. You know, think about that generation. That's one of the reasons I'm here and trying to pay back that debt. I joined the United States Marine Corps, did my small part, did a few tours in Iraq. And the other debt I've been trying to pay back in my life is that debt to the network of courageous Christians. And in trying to pay back that debt, I have been and will continue to be a real warrior for religious liberty, religious freedom, and men and women of faith. And so I'm running for the United States Senate to try to advance those ideals, to try to protect the Judeo-Christian bedrock of America, not the Muslim bedrock, not the atheist bedrock, but America was founded on a bedrock of Judeo-Christian values. And there's so many factors that differentiate those values from other belief sets, but one of the differentiating factors is our acknowledgement of good versus evil and our willingness to fight for good over evil. And as Lou, you so articulately communicate on your show here and have for many years on your podcasts and your TV shows, that we need fighters who have backbone and steel spine to stand up to a lot of evil in this world. And then I'm also going to Washington to advance the cause of American exceptionalism and American strength. I believe we need to return to the Reagan Shining City on the Hill doctrine and the Trump America First, Strong America doctrine. And right now, unfortunately, we're living under an administration, the Biden administration, which I believe is a continuation of the Obama doctrine. And the Obama doctrine was one that said, let's bring America down a few pegs. Let's bring other countries up and have this, quote unquote, global community where we're all equal. And I think as we've seen time and time again throughout American history, when America is weak, the world is not peaceful and the American people are not prosperous. But when America is strong, when America leads, when America has a strong commander in chief, when America has a strong economy, when America has a strong military, that is when the American people are prosperous, have money in their pockets, their families are happy and safe. And it's also when the world is most peaceful. And so that's why I'm going to the U.S. Senate to go try to advance those ideals. Not for you, Lou, not for me, not for our generation. I don't think it's about us anymore. I'm going to do it for our kids and our grandkids. And for me, it's about, you know, my three kids, Gideon, Judah, and Rosie. And it's about doing it for the kids and grandkids of all your listeners as well.
Well, those are great reasons. And I think most Americans share both your vision and the role of the Judeo-Christian heritage that we all share. And we want for our country, because it is the foundation for our, in my judgment, for our future, our destiny as a nation. I want to turn, you mentioned being a warrior, being a fighter throughout. And I have to say that the I will call it a kerfuffle that you got into with your opponent on the stage the other day. One of the things that I was impressed with is how quickly, when he stood over you with his body challenging you, his body language was insulting. And when he said, "You don't understand," I believe it took you about a nanosecond to rise from your chair and meet him head on. They don't train that. They don't teach that in candidate school. They don't teach that in politician school. It was so refreshing to see a man stand up and act like a man and say, "This isn't going to happen. And here we go." I want to just compliment you for doing that. It was absolutely natural and reflexive. So we saw Josh Mandel in person, the way you live your life. And I have to say, it was impressive. And I just want to thank you for meeting head on a challenge, a threat in point of fact, like that.
I appreciate you saying that, Lou. You know, sometimes you your instincts just kick in. And that's what happened there. And I felt what my opponent was doing, this Mike Gibbons guy, was insulting veterans throughout Ohio and throughout the country by saying that serving in the military isn't real work. And I just felt an obligation to stand up to him.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good on you. We all appreciate it. I want to turn now to the issues that are in front of us and broadly. First and foremost, your assessment as a veteran of what's going on in Ukraine. We have now thousands of troops and more apparently on the way to the eastern flank of the NATO countries. Your sense of what's going on, your thoughts.
Sure. Well, when I look at this situation, I go back to when the wall fell in Germany, which was a product of American strength and President Reagan's leadership. And you're probably familiar with the story, but for some of your listeners who are not, Putin was the KGB station chief at the time. And basically his comrades left the KGB station, but he was a loyalist and he stayed there to burn documents and do whatever he's supposed to do. The KGB station gets surrounded. And he thought that was the end of his life. He walks out. And somehow he talks his way out of it with the troops there, and I think convinced them that, you know, he was like a low-level janitor or clerk or something. And he's spoken about the fact that that was the most embarrassing moment in his life, to have to abandon the KGB station, be surrounded. And he talks about how it was embarrassing not only for him personally, but for his mother, Russia, as well. And he blames that moment of extreme embarrassment on Ronald Reagan and the United States of America. And ever since that time, he's hated America and what we stand for. And so, you know, I think it's important to understand, for all your listeners, understand that history, that I personally believe there's nothing pro-American about being pro-Putin. I also think it's important, you know, for your listeners to know that on February 4th of this year, right before the Olympics, Putin flew to Beijing, and he and Xi, the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, out a joint statement to the world. And in that joint statement, there was one line that was addressed to the American people. And it said this, quote, "We the Russian Federation, we the Chinese Communist Party, we are focused on a redistribution of power in the world." Translation, they are focused on the downfall of America and the rise of the Russian Federation and the Chinese Communist Party. And so I think it's important to view this war, this conflict with Russia and Ukraine through that lens. That this is, I think, the decision to invade Ukraine was made in Beijing between Putin and Xi on February 4th, or maybe even before then. And this is a demonstration for Xi, and he's watching it very closely. That being
excuse me, I think many of our listeners are familiar with the 5,000 word agreement that is actually a treaty between the two nations, long in the making, 27 visits in point of fact, between the two heads of state. The invasion, though, was ordered by Vladimir Putin, with his strategic partner's approval, apparently, Xi Jinping. But what we're witnessing now, the United States government has now said point blank what Vladimir Putin is committing in Russia is not only war, but he is a war criminal. And that puts it pretty clearly. When you sacrifice as many civilians, Ukrainian civilians, as he has, when you devastate just for the sheer power, for the purpose of exercising the sheer power you possess, as Putin has, you are a war criminal. He has killed people without any compunction whatsoever. And it's outrageous. And more outrageous to me, frankly, is the fact that the entire European Union, NATO, which is a defense organization, and the United States of America had 3 months warning to do something about it, to position supplies, food, equipment, weaponry, and did nothing. And that is the behavior of fools. And perhaps cowards as well, but I'll certainly say fools. And that isn't what we elect presidents for, or Congress, or senators for. There's an absence of leadership to have allowed this to happen.
I agree wholeheartedly. I wish I had a lot to add to that, but I don't. I think you nailed it, and you hit the just bullseye. And the failure by NATO, the failure by Biden, the weakness by Biden, the incompetence coming out of his White House, out of his Pentagon, the incoherence of his foreign policy all led up and contributed to this. Not to mention, Lou, his energy policy. You know, when Trump left the White House, he left America energy independent and an exporter of natural gas. All Biden had to do was nothing. If Biden would have just continued the Trump energy policy, we by now would be a mass exporter of natural gas into Europe. If we would have been undercutting Putin's prices in throughout Europe, he wouldn't have the money, time, resource to be invading Ukraine. He'd be dealing with a bunch of economic headaches back home. But instead, Biden comes in, shuts down the Keystone XL pipeline, stops the pipeline from Alberta, Canada, to Michigan, lifts sanctions on Russia, which enabled the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And then Biden says to us, the American people, that he wants us to depend on OPEC. It's like, wait a second, Biden, OPEC? These are radical Muslim countries in the Middle East, many of which would love to push America into the sea. How about instead of depending on OPEC, we depend on places like Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado. And, you know, a lot of your listeners, I think, would be pleasantly surprised to hear this statistic, because I was pleasantly surprised to hear it as well. If you took the state of Ohio, the state of Pennsylvania, and the state of West Virginia, our three states, combined them into a region, that region would be the third largest producer of natural gas in the entire world.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either when I first heard it. It's unbelievable. So, you know, we're not a big oil state. Obviously, Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Colorado, Louisiana, those are big oil states. But what we do here, what we have here, is an abundance of natural gas.
And we're an energy-rich country. There's no question about that, and the most powerful. I've got to get to a couple of things. We've got limited time. I know you've got a busy schedule. Let me turn just to a few things, get some quick reaction from you, and so that people get a broader sense of who Josh Mandel is. And let me start with Senator Mitt Romney saying Ketanji Jackson Child's views on porn and the attacks by the Republicans, as they were styled, those porn attacks are off course, according to Mitt Romney, and won't affect the way he votes. I know that you're busy, but I also know that you read and follow the news. What are your thoughts of Ketanji Jackson as the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court?
In my mind, she's disqualified for a variety of reasons. You know, that one of them. But the bigger one is, you know, when Senator Kennedy asked her yesterday, when does life begin? And she couldn't even answer the question. And I am done with any of these nominees that are abortionists. And, you know, I think any nominee who stands up there and is okay with the murder of innocent children in violation of thou shalt not kill and the Ten Commandments, in my mind, are not qualified to be justices. And Lou, that applies to the district courts, the appellate courts, and frankly, people running for county judge here in Cuyahoga County or the Ohio Supreme Court. It's just, if we're not going to protect life and protect innocent children, then nothing else really matters. Not to mention so many of her other radical views across the board. And, you know, I just think she is so outrageously radical and outside of the mainstream. And listen, if you watch who she's been in her past, she's not going to be a justice. She's going to be a legislator. And that's the opposite of what we want on any court, let alone the Supreme Court. We don't want these activist judges who think it's their job to make law. You know, we need judges, you know, in the spirit of Scalia, who understand the role of the judicial branch.
And she sits on the board with a friend and associate. The two of them, a longtime friend, sit on the board of a private school, which has CRT, critical race theory. As Senator Cruz said, brimming with CRT. She feigned ignorance of the fact. She feigned ignorance of what CRT is and was evasive and left absolutely no impression whatsoever that she had any responsibility for CRT in a school in which she sat on the board. Your reaction?
Sure. Well, it's just not believable. Of course she knew about it. And let me talk about this virus of critical race theory that's infecting our kids' minds and separating our kids down racial lines. So I was having coffee the other day with my buddy Mike here in the Cleveland area. He and his wife, Danielle, they have an eight-year-old. Their eight-year-old daughter is the same age as my daughter, Rosie. So their daughter comes home from school. She goes to an all-girl school here. She comes home from school. Say, hey, honey, how was school today? She says, good, what'd you do? And she says, well, we did affinity groups. And my buddy Mike says to his daughter, well, what's an affinity group? And she says, oh, well, they split the, you know, class and the black kids into one group and the white kids in another group and the Hispanic kids and the Asian kids and everyone had their own group. He's like, oh, well, what was the point of doing that? And she's like, well, you know, they gave names of each of the groups. And he said, and Mike says, well, what was the name of your group, the white girls? And she said, the name of our group was Bystanders and Oppressors.
Whoa.
Lou, these are eight-year-old girls with bows in their hair. They're calling them oppressors. And you know what the left is doing? They are stomping on the grave of Martin Luther King. When Martin Luther King preached to judge people based on the content of one's character, not the color of one's skin. And the left is just trying to make everything about skin color. And yeah, you know, listen, you know,
isn't just Martin Luther King, they're kicking every one of us in this country, every citizen who believes in the values of this country, who understands this country's history, its heritage, and all that we have done to benefit the world. Only ignorant fools would divide children rather than bring them together. Only fools would be so absolutely dishonest and reckless and vicious as to do that. I condemn them, and I don't understand why every American doesn't condemn anyone who would do that and be a part of it. Whether your child is in that school, your child should be out of that school. If you are involved in anyone who's doing that, you might as well be involved with the Ku Klux Klan as these proponents of critical race theory, because they're every bit as ignorant and perhaps even more pernicious and dangerous.
I called it a virus before, and I really think that's what it is. It's spread by the left in this country.
Yep.
And the liberal elites who want to divide the American people down racial lines, down socioeconomic lines. And it's part, I believe, Lou, of a bigger cause they're trying to advance called socialism. And when you look at the arc of world history, you know, socialist regimes, they come in. One of the first things they do is they try to take God out of society and take religion out. And that's what these people are doing here. It's this like race to a secular America, and they want to try to take faith out of all aspects of life. And my feeling is we shouldn't be watering down on the Judeo-Christian foundation of America. We should be doubling down and instilling it in the classroom, in the workplace, and everywhere in society. And then part of the socialist playbook is you take guns away from the people, right? They're trying to do that. You know, then the socialists, what they like to do is a stomp on speech. And look what's going on. Like, you got big government colluding with big tech to stomp on our free speech. And then once you've taken away religion, taken away guns, taken away free speech, then they try to divide the people, right? They pit the people against each other. And that's exactly what they're doing with critical race theory, with all this transgender craziness. They're literally trying to divide the American people down racial lines, down, you know, socioeconomic lines. And it's vile, it's disgusting, and it's all part of that socialist playbook. And we got to do everything we can to stop it. And that's why I say we can't send these wimpy, squishy, soft Republicans to Washington anymore. We gotta send fighters. Like, we gotta send fighters to Washington. No more soft and soggy Republicans.
I don't want to hear from any more never Trumpers. I don't want to hear from any Republicans in name only. I want people who believe in this Constitution, believe in this this great nation of ours, and as far as I'm concerned, you're fitting the bill, Josh, and I appreciate that. You and Gibbons are running very close in the run-up to the election. What is it, in May? Give us a sense of what you expect to unfold here over the next couple of months.
Sure. So, when this race started, we thought our main opponent would be the former party chairman. And, you know, she just hasn't caught steam how we thought she would. Then we thought it was going to be this guy, J.D. Vance. He ended up being a big never Trumper, and he sort of sank his own campaign with all of his never Trump language. Then we thought it was going to be a auto dealer, a very successful businessman, good guy. He put in a lot of money into the race and was really catching steam, but he decided not to continue his campaign. And then now we find ourselves, it sort of developed into a two-man race between me and this guy, Mike Gibbons. Gibbons made his money by investing in Chinese CCP-owned companies. He was actually invested in Chinese Petro, also known as Sinopec. At the same time, Hunter Biden was real involved with it. And this was a company owned by the Chinese Communist Party. He specialized in taking American companies and basically selling them to other countries, China, India, Mexico, all over Europe. One of the ones that he's very defensive about is, you know, he took an American company from the American Midwest and sold it to a company called Shanghai Shenda, you know, which is a CCP owned company. And, you know, this guy basically became a multi-gazillionaire by selling American jobs into China. And then now he's using that money he stuffed in his pockets to run for US Senate. And he's my main.
You know, some of the wealthy people in this country, I've noticed, particularly here of late, there always been a handful, but they're cutting out the middleman now. They've decided they're just going to go run for office themselves with their billions of dollars. I guess the next thing we'll see is Jack Dorsey and Zuck out trying it out. That way you don't have to worry about communicating through channels. You can just tell people what to do yourself. I love this idea of having a bunch of billionaires in the U.S. Senate or the House of Representatives. I'm sorry, go ahead. I just couldn't help but make that observation.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's just like super condescending. He's also pro-choice, which, as I said, it's a disqualifier for a justice, a Supreme Court or a federal judge. I think it's also a disqualifier for a U.S. senator. And yeah, he's just a bad guy. And so, but the one thing he's got over me is like, he's super rich. He's put in $12 million of his own money. And so, you know, we're out here, you know, we're running a grassroots campaign, and, you know, we've got this army of MAGA, America First activists and constitutional conservatives here in Ohio, but frankly, Lou, all over the country, who are volunteering for our campaign, making phone calls. And, you know, a lot of them go on my website. It's joshmandel.com, joshmandel.com. And, you know, they send us messages. Hey, I'd like to volunteer. Even though I live in, you know, Texas, I'd like to volunteer. Even though I live in Florida, I'd like to volunteer. Even though I live in California, I'd like to volunteer. And so we've got a lot of volunteers all over the country. And people go on there, you know, they give $5, $10, $20, and it all adds up. And so we're running this grassroots campaign. We're up in the polls by 2 points, but it's very, very, very tight. And we're in a dogfight against this guy who basically made his money, you know, selling American jobs to China and stuffing the money in his pockets. And so and he was doing this while President Trump was running on an America First anti-CCP platform. And so this is it's one of those situations where the contrast could not be any more clear. You know, I'm the pure America First constitutional conservative, and this guy's the guy who made money from China and was trying to buy the race.
Well, Josh Mandel, it's been terrific of you to spend some time with us. We appreciate it. I've enjoyed talking with you. Look forward to our next conversation, and the battle goes on. Josh. We always give our guests the last word, and we're at that point, and here you are. Take it away.
All right. Well, let me just finish up by saying it's an honor to be on the Lou Dobbs Show. I mean, I've been a fan of yours for so long, you know, both on TV and your podcast here, and I just feel like you've had the intestinal fortitude and cojones to say things that, you know, so many other people on the right side of the ledger just have been they've been afraid to say, while you've been unafraid. And that's what we need. We need leaders in the media, in your case, in politics, in my case, in business and education, who've got backbone and who've got spine and are willing to fight and speak truth to power. And that's how I think of you, Lou. That's how I am. And, you know, any of your listeners who want to help me out, again, it's joshmandel.com, joshmandel.com. I am pro-God, pro-gun, pro-liberty, pro-Trump. And when I go to Washington, I'm going to fight with two documents in hand, with the Bible in one hand and the Constitution in the other.
Good for you. You're going to be well-armed. And again, we have just, we've enjoyed thoroughly talking with you. I know that your agenda is going to appeal to just about everybody, I would think, in the audience for the Great America Show. Thanks for being with us. God bless you.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks to Josh Mandel. Tomorrow, among our guests here to discuss Ukraine, Putin, and what a weak and impaired president means to our national security, and the hidden role of the Chinese Communist Party, is Gordon Chang. Also with us this week, Congressman Jim Jordan, former intelligence official, Russian expert, and author of the bestseller, Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America, author Rebecca Koffler, and Real Clear Politics co-founder and publisher Tom Bevan. We hope you'll be with us for what is likely to be a week of big events. Thanks, everybody, for being with us today. Till tomorrow, God bless you. And God bless America.